Okay, great. So we'll go ahead and get started. So as I said, we're here today to talk about the final data report from the NCIAD pilot. And one of the things we really want to highlight today are the benefits of participating in this project. So the first item here on the list is that you're provided with timely and actionable data over time. So once states have participated in the project, they actually will be receiving their state-specific reports within 6 months of actually finalizing their data and handing it in to HSRI. That you will not see quick turnaround like that in other projects that are out there, so that is definitely one of the big benefits. And as states participate over time, we're capturing that data from year to year. So they'll be able to compare their data each year as they move forward, and they can compare data also to other states who have been participating in the project over time. States actually own their own data, so once they turn the data into HSRI and it's cleaned up, they have access to their data after that. HSRI provides state-specific reports based on the questions that are in the survey, but the states also then own their data, so they can do further analysis if they want to. They can also work with HSRI to do further analysis if they are interested. So the states are provided with their data reports, as I mentioned, and they're also provided with a lot of technical assistance with those data reports. So if a state sees something that they find interesting in the data and they'd like to dig deeper into that, they can work with us and with HSRI to kind of look deeper into the data that they have, or talk with HSRI about how to do that themselves, since the state does own the data. Another benefit of participating in the project is that it's capturing the performance of the state's long-term services and support system as a whole. So that's regardless of funding source. So we're looking at Medicaid participants, non-Medicaid, so state-funded programs, older American Act programs, and we're also looking at different settings. So we're looking at people in the home and community. We're also looking at people who are being served in skilled nursing facilities or in nursing homes. So this is really providing a snapshot of a state's long-term services and support system. It's not just looking specifically at one program type. And states can work with NASHWID and HSRI to design a sample that will best represent the long-term services and support system in their state. The survey is gathering information directly from a randomly selected group of consumers through face-to-face interviews, and that's definitely one of the benefits that we saw from the NCI project when we began thinking about redesigning this survey, is that the survey is something that is face-to-face, so you're really having a chance to sit down and have a conversation with consumers about how they feel about their services, and then getting a snapshot of quality of life and outcomes of the individuals who are participating in the services that your programs are supporting. It's focusing on the consumer's experience and how their experience is impacted, their quality of life. So we're really going beyond just service satisfaction at this point and looking at the quality of life of the individual, and gathering that information through those in-person interviews is a big piece of that. States are also going to be able to then will have a snapshot of what their state looks like as compared to other states. We will have a website where that data will also be hosted, so there'll be charts similar to the nationalcoreindicators.org website, where states can actually compare their data to each other. Another big benefit of participating in the project is that this is a state-run initiative, because we, as an association, have been building this with the states in mind, and states have helped us to shape this project. So as we move forward and more states are participating, we'll start to see communities of practice. So we'll be holding in-person meetings with the individuals who are running these projects, so that we can really sit down and have conversations about how the project is going, some of the best practices in states, interesting and innovative things that states are doing with their data, or different ways that they're planning to conduct interviews. So it's really a chance for states to sit down and think at the bigger picture and talk with other states about the data and how they can use it.
And I'm going to take over. This is Julie. Thank you for joining us. I have to apologize ahead of time. I am sick, in addition to being buried in Boston, though I did get out in time. But so my voice is going a little bit. But hopefully you can hear well enough, and it will last until the end of the hour. So to remind those who have heard this before, and to let everybody else knows, there are people on the phone who have not heard this before. We conducted the pilot of the survey in three states, the three brave pilot states, Minnesota, Georgia, and Ohio. Their samples included recipients of both the waiver services and Older American Act services and some state-funded services. Each of the three states aimed to collect at least 400 surveys. We conducted over 3 months prior to the beginning of the pilot. We conducted technical assistance calls and planning calls with each of the three states. We did the first round of in-person interviewer training in January of this last year now, so a year ago. The second interviewer training took place in February and the third one in April, and this is an in-person training, much like we'll be doing for each incoming state joining in year one, where we'll travel to each state and do this training over either a course of a day or two, depending on the needs. The three pilot states had until September of 2014 to collect the data. And because they're all overachievers, they actually collected and entered all of the data by the beginning of 2014. So we are going to go over some of the, or rather highlight some of the results from the pilot report that you all, I think, should have seen by now. This is, just as a reminder, these results should really be considered an illustration to the type of data and the usability that will come out of the project once it starts rolling in June of this year. And for the pilot states, it's really a preview of what they can expect to see. But the primary goal of the pilot was to test the survey, and that's a part of the reason for why we are not actually identifying the states in the report or in the webinar. We're simply going to be referring to them as State 1, State 2, and State 3. You're free to guess which one is which, but we will not confirm or deny either way. The three states themselves know which ones they are. An overview of who was included in the sample for the three states. State 1 was really an overachiever and actually conducted a little over 800 interviews. About half of that sample were participants of Older American Act program, and the other half was participants of the waiver program. In that particular state, there was a joint waiver for both that included both older adults and people with physical disabilities. For the purposes of analysis, we split it up, and if the person was under 65 and in the waiver, they were classified as a person with a physical disability in waiver. If the person was 65 or older, they were classified as an older adult in waiver. And you see the percentages there. In State 2, about 20% of the sample were in the Older American Act. About 33% were in the disability waiver, and a little less than a half were in the older adults waiver. In State 3, 10% in Older American Act. Majority of the sample were in the older adults waiver, and 23% were in the physical disability or in the disability waiver. I should also say that in State 1, there were about 7% of the sample who could not be determined which program they fell under because of the way that the data were collected. That is why the percentages do not add up to 100 there. Also, should say for future, the numbers for the state, the estimates for the state as a whole in the pilot are not necessarily very representative for the state as a whole because the proportions in the different programs are not proportional to the population served. In future, and that's another reason why we're not identifying the states. in the future when we're conducting analysis, we will be, if a state oversamples a certain program, so for example, they oversample one particular waiver or they oversample the Older American Act participants, we will be adjusting for that in analysis state and developing statistical weights to adjust the proportions. That was not done for the pilot results for the state as a whole. Just some information from the report and from the data. The first table is a breakout by of who the person lives with. You'll see that in both state 2 and state 3, the majority of people lived alone, whereas in state 1, the proportion is quite a bit smaller. You'll also see some of the limitations of the administrative data. So for state 2, because this information is supposed to the extent possible, come from administrative data. In state 2, you could not distinguish between if the person did not live alone and lived with some family member or friend, we could not tell exactly who that person lived with. So for future, sort of a lesson learned, that for future administrations in year 1, if the information cannot be determined from administrative data, then the vendor, the interviewer, should be really collecting the missing pieces during the survey administration itself. You'll also see that in state 3, at least during the pilot, nobody lived in a congregate setting, and we define congregate setting as hospital, institution, or some sort of nursing facility, or in some cases of assisted living, depending on the layout. Whereas in state 1, 37% did, and in state 2, 21% did. The usual living arrangements, on the other hand, and that's it's two separate questions: who does a person live with, and what is their usual living arrangement, which has more to do with the setting. State 2 and 3 had the vast majority of people living in their own family or owner family home or apartment, whereas state 1, only 40% did. And also state 1, 48% of the sample lived in an assisted living facility, which explains why such a large proportion was determined to live in congregate setting in the first table there. This is a busy graph. This is an overall, not breaking out by state. So this exact information does not appear in the report. This is looking at all of the data together, not breaking it out by state, but instead breaking it out by type of program, and looking at the health being some of the diagnoses of the participants of the sample. These data are where asterisks on the bottom there, that they're based on two states because one of the states that information was missing. The blue bars are the percentages of people in the Older American Act with that particular diagnosis. The greenish bar is the percentage of people in the disability waiver with that particular diagnosis, and the orange bar is the percentage in the aging waiver with that particular diagnosis. So you'll see that, not surprisingly, which is good, 69% of people in the disability waiver actually had a diagnosis of physical disability. So it's good in a sense that the data are showing what we expected it to show. Alzheimer's and other dementia, a much higher proportion of participants in the aging waiver had those diagnoses. Participants of the physical disability waiver had a much higher incidence of both traumatic brain injury and IDD, as well as mental illness. I guess another couple of things that are worth pointing out, that 75% of people in the aging waiver had the arthritis, and 43% of them had heart disease.
next.
I'll pass it back to Chelsea for a little while.
We'll tag team.
Thanks, Julie. So, as you can see from the slides that Julie just went over, one of the things that we think is very important to highlight here today is the kinds of background data that you can gather about the people who are participating and actually being surveyed in your when you're implementing NCID in your state. So you can get some really good big picture kind of background data about the individuals served in your state, and some of this data was highlighting that. So now what we have pulled up here is the question about how people had heard about their services. And what I really want to talk to you all today is about how you can take some of this data and start to think about how you might use it in your state. So I'll really be trying to highlight some examples of questions that might come up based on looking at some of this data. So how the person heard about the services. So this is really a snapshot of all three states' data combined. And as you can see from the snapshot, the majority of people were hearing about services through their family members, 30%. Some were hearing about this through friends. And then you can see kind of a breakdown of the other places that they heard about services. We were actually very interested to see that about 9%, and some of the states it was even higher if you broke it down by state, heard from their doctor about services. So when we're looking at data like this, what a state might start to think about when they're looking at their own data is, you know, how are we going to use this? So one of the things that we kind of notice is a lot of people are hearing about services from family and friends. What does that mean for the aging network? And what that really means is that the ADRCs and the AAAs and states even to some extent should start thinking about how they're forming these conversations about accessing services to actually be talking to the family members and friends of individuals, as well as individuals themselves, of course. But this kind of data is something that can make you think about your programming and how you might tweak it a little bit to really be talking and having these conversations with family members and friends. Also in that kind of same line of thinking about the aging and disability network's connections with doctors and healthcare professionals. As you can see from this data, it turns out a lot of people were hearing about these services through their doctors. What does that mean? Were we a part of that conversation? Are we educating these healthcare professionals and doctors about the services that are offered through the state and the AAAs and the ADRCs? We want to make sure that we're really engaging with these other groups and not thinking solely about the individual themselves when we're talking about referral sources. So the next slide really gets into now, we're going to be showing some highlights from the domains of the survey. So what we tried to do here was pull out information that we found both interesting questions. Of course, because this was a pilot, we found that we had to redesign some of the questions moving forward. So I'm highlighting data that you can expect to see in the next round and the final revision of the survey. So community participation. We asked in the last 30 days, have you participated in some type of social activity, either inside or outside of your home? And we actually then followed up and said, if not, why not? So you can really see here that a fair amount of people are doing some kind of social activity in or outside of their home. But you'll notice that a couple of the states, the percentages are a bit higher and saying that they haven't been able to do that. So that's why we are then asking that follow-up question, if not, why not? And so you can actually then see breakdowns by percentages when you get your state data reports. But many of the participants actually said they didn't want to participate in a social activity. A lot of them cited things like health and physical limitations, transportation, so that they can actually get outside of their home, and accessibility issues. So that can help a state to start to think about, you know, these are some of the barriers for people to getting outside of their home and participating in social activity when they want to. How can we start to work with our system to make it easier for people to get outside of their home? We also provided in this slide a breakdown then of what it looks like for those who said they were able to participate in some kind of social activity in the last 30 days. And so when states are thinking about designing their sample, they'll be able to break down by program, and we'll help help each state think through what that will look like for their state. But we wanted to highlight here that you can do that. So here you can kind of see the breakdown between the Older Americans Act programming, the physical disability waiver, and the aging waiver participants, and how many of them were able to participate in some kind of social activity outside of their home. The next slide is also talking about the people's community participation. So this is really breaking it down by if they were able to get out, do things outside of their home when they want to. So this is kind of a more general question. Do you get to do things outside of your home when you want to? So this isn't just social activity, but this is really people's ability to get outside of their homes when they want to. And again, states will be able to see the breakdown by if they were not able to, why they weren't able to. So again, the similar things were cited here, health and physical limitations, transportation, accessibility, and then even cost was something that was showing up as a barrier for people to get outside of the home. And so what we really want to say with these kinds of data points and what states want to be thinking about is, you know, what is it that's causing people to maybe not be able to get outside of their home when they want to not be able to engage in social activity when they want to? Is it because of where they're living? Is it because we don't have the transportation options that they might need? States will really want to start to dig down and look more closely at their programs. Another benefit, of course, is that states will be able to compare themselves to other states, and states will be able to benchmark. So they'll be able to say, you know, when we started this survey in 2015, this many people said that they weren't able to get outside of their home when they wanted to, and we really want to move the mark on that. And so 5 years later, when you're still participating in the project, because we know you all will be, you'll be able to look back and say, you know, we did these things and changed people's access to transportation because we cited this as a problem. This has actually been able to, you know, and then you might see in the results that people's ability to participate with their community has changed, and you can think about the implications that changing transportation had and what that meant for the data that's showing up in the NCIAD survey results each year. So the next domain we wanted to highlight was choice and decision-making. So we asked a couple of questions about this. So can you eat meals at the time when you want to? And you see the different percentages here, and you'll see that state one in particular shows that their data for no is a little bit higher, 23%. So the question there when you're looking at state two and state three might be, what's maybe different for the programs in these other states that's allowing them more choice over their meal time? Another thing that we've actually discussed in the office is maybe is there a settings difference here? So in state one, you'll notice from the data that we presented earlier that many people are living in assisted living facilities. Is that having some kind of effect over people's choice of meal time? We also ask, do you get up and go to bed when you want to? And you can see the data here as well. These are, of course, very important indicators for people's ability to, in their choice and decision making, to control, you know, their day-to-day life. So this is interesting data that states will want to pay attention to. And if they see that they're finding results that they're not happy about, they can think about what kind of programming changes might be helpful, but also dig deeper and try to figure out why that data might look different in their state than it does in others. So the next domain that we'll talk about today is relationships. So we asked actually two questions. Can you see or talk to your family as often as you want to? And can you see or talk to your friends as often as you want to? And in our future survey, actually, we're going to be combining those two questions. So it will be just one question, and that's some feedback that we got from the pilot, as well as some of our steering committee states. We also then asked what the reasons were that people were unable to see their family and friends. So again, the things that people cited were things like transportation, accessibility, and health and physical limitations, and also staffing issues. So so what states would start to think about with this kind of data is, again, how can we help with transportation to make sure that people can see their family when they want to? How can we make sure that people are able to get on the phone with their friends and family when they want to? So the next domain that we looked at was satisfaction, and this slide is specifically satisfaction with living arrangements. And we've had a lot of conversations internally about, you know, how this data might be useful for states. I think satisfaction data is something that a lot of states will be able to point to when they're going to their state legislatures and justifying budgets. We've heard that actually on the NCI side that focuses on the intellectual and developmental disability population, that they can take this data from the project and go to their legislatures and justify, you know, why these programs are important, and then point to some of the status, you know, some of people's higher satisfaction with the services in their state as a reason for why these are important. So you see here actually a breakdown based on the service funding source of people who would prefer to live somewhere else. So we've broken it down by Older Americans Act, physical disability, and then aging waiver. And you can see, once you start to look more closely by program, how this might be different in different states, and you can start to ask questions about, you know, why is it that more people in the physical disability waiver in state one, actually in all of the states, are wanting to live somewhere else? What is it about this waiver that's not providing people with their choice in living arrangements? We also ask a follow-up question about what prevents people from living somewhere else, and you see the things that are cited here. So finances, too much trouble to move, again, health and physical, and mental condition. Accessibility would be a big one, and that's something that would tie to the physical disability waiver, and don't know anything else or afraid of change. So the next slide is really focusing on a general question about satisfaction with services. So we asked, in general, how satisfied are you with the services that you receive? And you can see here the breakdown: very dissatisfied, somewhat dissatisfied, neutral, somewhat satisfied, and very satisfied, and then you can break down by program. So this is something that we feel that states would probably be using in budget justifications. It's also giving just a good snapshot and overall view of how people feel and how satisfied they are with their services, and it's helpful when you can break it down by service type. The next part of satisfaction that we looked at was really about needs. So this is asking people, do the services that you receive meet your needs? And then we actually ask a follow-up question: what kind of additional services might help with those needs if not all of your needs are met? So it's giving a good snapshot here, again, of the service, whether or not services are meeting needs, and we might see some surprising answers here, and whether or not all service needs were met by the programs, and breaking it down by program. But then when we start to look at the data that you also get from our follow-up question, you can see the additional services that people cited were needing more PCA services, transportation, homemaker, nutritional services, mental health care, dental care, housing assistance, and we actually can break those down and help states to understand more clearly what other services people are saying that they might need. And this can really start to help states with quality improvement, because they can look at the service needs of their population, and since you can also break it down by service type, it's giving you a good idea of where you can improve for some of those services. So the next domain we looked at was coordination of care. And the things that we highlighted here are really about those people who had a rehab or hospital stay. So we asked a person if they had stayed in the hospital in the last 6 months, I believe. When they were leaving the hospital or rehab facility, did they feel comfortable going home or ready to go home? And you can see kind of the breakdowns here. There were a fair amount of people who said no or kind of in between, but somewhere between 83 and 91% of the people said yes, that they were comfortable. We asked also another question that said, after leaving the hospital, did someone follow up with you to make sure you had the services, supports, and help that you needed? And so here is some more interesting data. So we can see somewhere between 70 and 80% of people were saying, yes, somebody followed up with them. But that means that somewhere between 8 and 20% of people are saying, no, nobody followed up with them on their services and supports. We know that a lot of people end up back in the hospital if they've had a hospital stay recently, if they're not getting the proper care and home help that they need to stay at home safely after care, especially if they've had, some kind of medical intervention that's causing them to need more care at home than they would have had before their hospital stays. So that's something for the network to think about. How can we make sure that we're helping with those transitions from hospital back to home? So the next part of coordination of care that we're highlighting here is people's ability to reach their case manager. So we asked, can you reach your case manager when you need to? And you can see here what people said. Somewhere between 5 and 10% of people said no, they can't, and somewhere between 3 and 11% said only sometimes. And then we asked, has your case manager talked to you about services that might help with your needs? And this is actually a follow-up question to something that we showed earlier in the data, where we asked if there were if people had kind of unmet needs because they needed more services. We then asked a follow-up question if the case manager has specifically addressed this issue. And you can see that a fair amount of people said something like no or maybe not sure that their case manager hadn't followed up with them. So that's something that is definitely an actionable piece of data. So I'm going to hand it back over to Julie to talk about the access domain.
Just checking that I still have my voice. Seems like it. All right. So this is another snapshot of the overall data. So not breaking it down by state, but the total of 1,600 or so cases that we have from the sample. And this is specifically asking about the kind of home modifications that people need. We actually have a series of two questions. One is, do you have any of these types of home modifications, and do you need one or a better one than you have, an upgrade to the one that you have? So these percentages are out of everyone, not just out of people who said that they needed something, but these are percentages of everybody surveyed. How many of them said that they need something. And the most common one was that 15% of the total sample needed some sort of bathroom modification. Just a little bit less than that said they needed some grab bars. 9% said they needed an emergency response system, 8% specialized bed, 7% a ramp, and 4% said they wanted or needed, rather, remote monitoring. And just a little under 10% said that they needed something else. This slide is similar to the previous slide, but this one has to deal with assistive devices, so personal assistive devices versus home modifications. Again, it's a series of two questions. Do you currently have one of these, and do you need one of these or an upgrade to the one that you have? And again, this is a percentage out of everybody surveyed, not just out of people who said they needed something. So 15% of everybody surveyed said that they needed glasses. 10% said they needed hearing aids or scooter. 8% said that they needed a walker. 7% wheelchair. 4% cane, and 1% communication devices. This is about transportation, and there are two. I mean, we know transportation is an issue. I think Kelsey had referenced that before, but we wanted to really look at transportation in two ways. One, do you have transportation basically when you need it, so that's to get to medical appointments or pick up meds, and then do you have transportation when you want to do things outside of your home, like visit a friend, go for entertainment, do something for fun. So the majority of people did say they have transportation to get to medical appointments, but fewer people said that they have transportation to do things outside of home when they want to. Between 65% and 73% of people said yes to that question in the three states. This is about safety and specifically the fear of falling. 30% of people said that they were afraid of falling overall. We're changing actually the question to be, you know, to be more relevant to are you afraid of falling or being unstable? In the pilot of those who said that they were afraid of falling, slightly over half of them, slightly over half of them said that somebody worked with them to help reduce that risk or fear. And those percentages vary by programs, especially in state one and state two. This slide is specifically about healthcare coordination. Majority of people said that they could get a primary care doctor appointment when they needed to. So, you know, upwards of 80% in all three states said that they can always get their appointment when they need to. For people who said that they have some sort of chronic condition, we didn't ask them to specify what kind of chronic conditions, but if they have some sort of chronic conditions, again, upwards of 80%, actually upwards of 85% in all three states said that they have enough info and support to manage those chronic conditions. But one of the problems with this question, and we will be changing it for next year, is you don't know what you don't know. So people may not know whether they have enough information because they only know what they have. So we will be changing the question to, do you feel that you know how to manage the chronic conditions? We have a series of questions on preventive health care, physical exam, hearing exam, vision, dental visit, pneumonia, vaccine, and flu shots. And there's some percentages here. This is, again, overall snapshot of everybody in the sample. 75% of people got a flu shot in the past year, 82 had a physical exam, only 32 had a dental visit in the previous 6 months. And the breakouts by state are available in the report as well. All right. See, this is about wellness. We asked a series of questions about do you have trouble remembering basic things? Slightly under half said sometimes or often in the three states. We will be changing the question to, during the past 12 months, do you forget things more often than before, and so it seems to be getting worse? We then asked the follow-up question of, have you talked to somebody about having trouble remembering basic things, if the person did? Slightly more than 50% on average said that yes, they did. We will be changing this question to more specifically aim at talking to a healthcare professional versus just anybody. We're going to try to speed this up, so I'm going to hand it back to Kelsey.
So the next domain that we looked at was really about rights and respect. So we asked people, do you feel that you have enough privacy in your own home? And you can see here that the majority of people, between 91 and 95%, say yes. And also, do you feel that people who are paid to help you treat you with respect? And again, the majority of people, between 90 and 94%, have said yes. What we want to highlight here, and really what this This data will be important for lots of reasons, but one of the big reasons is that it's tying to the new HCBS reg. And so we actually have a crosswalk that we're working on now, and we're planning to release kind of a draft of that, since we don't have the final questions ready for the survey, but a draft of that in the next couple of weeks. So we'll have a crosswalk that takes the questions from the NCIAD survey and talks about how you can use those to meet the requirements of the new HCBS reg. So where this ties in here, as we will show in the report, is both to the individuals ensuring right to privacy, dignity, and respect, and freedom of coercion and restraint, and also the requirements around privacy in their unit, including entrances lockable by the individual, whether or not staff have keys as needed. The other thing that will be interesting about this data as we start to look at home, you know, the different settings of where people are living, is if people are feeling like they have enough privacy when they're living in a skilled nursing facility, maybe as compared to when they're living in their homes. As you noticed from our data at the beginning, kind of showing you a snapshot of the individuals that were surveyed for the pilot, the majority of people were living in their own home. Some people were living in assisted living facilities, but the majority of people were in their own home. I think the data for this will become much more interesting when we talk about the different settings that people are living in. The next domain that we looked at was self-direction of care. So we asked, did you help plan the services that you are now getting? And are you in charge of the services and supports that you receive? These are some of the questions that we asked around self-direction of care. And you can see that somewhere between 48 and 67% of people said, yes, they were able to help plan all of their services. And then we actually are showing a breakdown here of people who said that they did not get to help plan any of their services, and we broke that down by program. So you can see here what that looks like by program. This, again, is really big in the new HCBS reg, and so you'll see in the crosswalk kind of where this ties to the new reg and what that can mean for states as far as showing some data about these things. But really, this is about optimizing autonomy and independence and making life choices. Another part of the reg is around facilitating choice of services and who provides them. Whether the service planning process is driven by the individual, and providing necessary information and support to ensure that the individual directs the process to the maximum extent possible. So the data that you'll be capturing through this NCIAD survey can really speak to those requirements in the new reg. The next domain we looked at was employment. So we found in the pilot survey that most people do not work. Around 97% of people are not working. But we asked then a follow-up question of whether or not somebody would like to have a job. And we found that between 6 and 16% of people said, actually, yes, they would like a job. And that does include people who don't currently have jobs, of course. So then we broke that down by program, and you'll see here where the data starts to become more interesting as when you're looking at program. So not unsurprisingly, for the Older Americans Act and aging waivers, the percentages of people who would like a job are a little bit lower than what you're seeing in the physical disability waivers. So, you know, it's also interesting to note that a lot of people in the Older Americans Act and aging waivers are saying that they would like a job. So what does that mean for your state, and how are we going to work to provide more opportunities for people to work in all of these different service types? So the next domain is everyday living. So we ask questions really about people's basic care needs, their ADLs, so bathing, dressing, going to the bathroom, eating, or moving around their home. And we asked of the respondents who said that they, yes, in fact, need help with these ADLs, do they get enough of that help? And so you can see here the breakdowns that most people, around 80% in all of the states, said yes, they're always getting enough of that help. And then we're showing here also the power of the data, because you can, again, break down by program and look a little deeper into this. So this is who are always getting enough help with their basic care need, and then broken down by program. So you can kind of see the differences between the programs here. We also then asked about IADL, so preparing meals, housework, shopping, taking medications, these kinds of things. And of the respondents who said that they do need help with their IADLs, we asked, do you get enough help with those? And again, you can see that somewhere between 82 and 85% said yes, always. And then we've broken down again by service type, those who have always feel that they get enough help with everyday activities. So the next domain we looked at was planning for the future, and this is something that a lot of states said they're very interested in having data about. We learned in the pilot that the question that we asked, do you know how to get information or help when you are planning for your future needs or services or supports, that a lot of people said they actually did not know how to get information or help. So what we've done is kind of reworked this question and then added a question. We say, do you need help planning for your future needs for services? And then we're asking, which of the following forms of decision-making or assistance do you have in place, if any? And actually breaking down by the different things that we've heard from states that they'd like to know about, so that you actually have data points to look at when we're talking about future planning. And you can see how many people have these things in place, and probably more interesting also, how many people do not have these things in place, and start to think about how you can help with those conversations, help case managers have those conversations with individuals about the needs for planning.
And one last domain that we want to sort of highlight, excuse me, in this presentation today is what we're calling a functional competence domain. So we asked people whether they feel as independent as they can be given their physical limitations and health limitations. And interestingly, majority of people said yes. More than 80% of people in all three states said yes, and those numbers are pretty stable. With that asked whether you feel in control of your life. And again, almost three-fourths of people in those three states said yes, so that's great. We also then asked people to rank in order of importance the four things: health, being independent, feeling control, and safety. Actually, the rankings came out to be in the order that I read them. The most important one on average was health, second one was being independent, third one was feeling control, and last, safety came last, which is interesting. We did find during a pilot that people cannot distinguish very easily being independent and feeling in control, so we will be changing the four things that we're asking people to rank to health, being independent, safety, and something along the lines of community engagement, I believe, but we will be retaining the questions. And the last thing that we want to talk about today, and then we'll open up for questions if there's time, is our plans going forward. And I'll give it back to Kelsey.
So I just want to kind of do a recap of what we talked about today and talk about how states can use their NCIAD data before we talk about next steps. So some of the things that we mentioned are using this data in budget justifications for state legislatures and also being able to paint a real picture of your programs using this data. So we're providing this big picture data on the populations that are served in your state. That's also something I think would be useful to take to your state legislatures as well as advocates and people being served. I think people would like to know kind of what the cohorts look like in your state. Using the data for quality improvement efforts, communicating with family and advocates, and you can really work with family and advocates, and we've seen a lot of this on the NCI side on quality improvement efforts in your state. So taking this data and saying, here's some places we think we need to improve, and engaging with family and advocates and other people in the state to talk about what your next steps moving forward would be with that. identifying issues that the states can flag for deeper analysis. And once you've done that, you can work with us and HSRI to actually dig deeper into your data to provide a deeper analysis. You also, of course, as I mentioned, the states own their data, so they can also do some internal analysis and ideally be working with us on that as well. A big use for the data that we've seen is states are designing their samples now for the project that's starting this year, is comparing their managed care organizations or AAAs and regions and also program types to each other. So they're building samples that will have the power to actually be able to compare these different groups to each other so they can, for managed care, for instance, really look at the different managed care organizations and see how they're doing and comparing to each other. And that can help also with quality improvement efforts. So quality improvement in MLTSS systems. You can also use this for benchmarking and comparing your data nationally because states will be able to compare their data to each other. And we'll have a website where you can easily do that and send people to look at your state data. That will be helpful. And then meeting the CMS quality assurance and compliance, especially with the new HCDS settings regulation. As I mentioned, and we'll mention again, we have a draft that we're finalizing and we'll be sharing in the next couple of weeks that really shows the questions and how they follow along with the new reg and how states can use those for compliance. So quickly with next steps. We've been working with states who are interested. Right now we have 9 new states and there are 3 pilot states who are continuing on for using the survey. It's going to be available for use starting June 1st of this year, and states will be collecting data in kind of 2 different rounds, which I'll talk about shortly. But what I want to say to those states who have not committed to joining already this year, if you are still interested, there is room for 3 more states. We'd like to know if you're planning to join us sometime soon, so by the end of this month would be ideal, or in early March, if you can let us know. So you can email me after this call and let me know if you're interested. And if you're interested in joining for next year in 2016, we'd also love to know that and would like to start having conversations. So again, feel free to email me. So for this year only, we're actually doing 2 rounds of data collection that I'll talk about quickly. Everyone's going to start with the survey on June 1st, start their interviews if they want to. But we have 6 states who are planning to do a shortened data collection period, so they'll have their data turned into HSRI by the end of September of this year, so that we can have some draft state-by-state reports out in December of this year still, so that we've got some real data to show everyone that is the data that you'll see moving forward, because this is the final survey. So that's exciting. The rest of the states will start on June 1st if they want to and have until the end of May to collect their data of 2016. So that's a full year, and that actually follows how it's conducted on the NCI IDD side of the project. Their draft reports will be ready in October of 2016, and we'll have kind of a final picture of all of the states, a final report ready in December of 2016. So with that, I am going to unmute the line and open it up for questions from people on the line. For those of you who muted yourself when you started, you will still be on mute, so you'll have to push *6 if you'd like to ask a question.
Presentation mode is now disabled.
So are there any questions from the group? And this is just a reminder to press *6 if you don't have a question, because that will mute your line if you haven't already pressed it. So does anyone have any questions for us?
No one?
I'll use this time while I'm waiting to see if anyone can think of a question, just to let you know that the full report, if you don't have it in your hands right now, is actually available on our website. So you can go to www.nasuad.org, that's Nashuad, and on our homepage, you'll see actually that there's a news story highlighting the results.
Also,
page that specifically talks about the NCIED project, and you're welcome to go on there and kind of poke around. You'll see the report there, and you'll also see a recording of all of the webinars that we've had in the past, and this webinar today will also be available.
Hi, I have a quick question.
Yeah.
This is Paba, Aditya Paba from Texas HHSC.
Okay.
In one of the slides you showed, when the question was answered, you actually broke it down by program level.
Mm-hmm.
Is that something we'll be able to do on our side with the data, or is that something we'd have to request to see if we want more information about the way a result turned out?
So, this is Julie. The reports that we'll be producing, as a matter of fact, for everyone and for the national report, will have every question broken down by program. And actually, in the pilot report, that is the way it's done as well, that every question is broken down by type of program. So you'll see that. If you want to drill down deeper, then we can work with you, depending on the kind of analysis you want to do as well.
Okay, that's good. Thank you.
Sure. Are there other questions?
Hi, this is Jennifer Rosenbaum in New York. Thank you very much for the presentation. This is really more, I think, on the technical side, and maybe it's on your website. Concerning data security protocols and business associate agreements, that kind of thing, are those things posted to the website in terms of the construct of the initiative?
I'm going to try to address it. In terms of data security, we are currently designing the online data, what we're calling DESA for AD. It's an online data entry system, and that is completely secure. It's been used on the NCI side for about 5 years now, I believe, or if not more. So we're developing the same system for AD. In terms of what is posted on the website, I'm not sure. I'm not sure there is anything yet. But Kelsey.
Right, so I think this might be something, Jennifer, that I can follow up with you offline, but we use the online data, the ODESA system, because it does make sure that the data is secure. But if you want more details about why that is true, that's definitely something that I can provide you with. And maybe it's something we should also be putting up on the website as we move forward so that everyone has that information. So thanks. Are there other questions? Okay, it sounds like that there are not any more questions. So with that, we will end our webinar. Thank you, everyone, for joining us today. And, of course, if you do have questions, you want to talk to me offline, feel free to email me at kwalter@nasawid.org or email Julie or both of us, and we'd be happy to talk with you. Thank you, everyone.
Thanks, all.
Thank you.